From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this lovely Monday morning. I think this is the first time I've done the show this year that we've had blue sky as I look out the window of the studio. So I hope that you are enjoying it and that you had a fabulous weekend. I certainly did. If I sound a little bit off, it's because I was at the Offspring concert last night, and I think there is some residual effects from a lot of shouting at that particular event. But so if you were there, and in fact, I met a number of Chai FM listeners there, including a very pleasant economist who lives, I think, somewhere in Heilersdorf. So if you're listening, sir, thank you for introducing yourself at the concert. It was very nice to make your acquaintance. We have a number of interesting things, as we always do on the show on this Monday morning. We are going to be reviewing some of the factors that led to this hostage deal. Why now and not in May, given that the deal is actually similar to the one in May, but different in a number of important aspects. So we're going to be looking at what are the factors that went into that. Also going to be looking at some surprising results from the Ophthalmology South Africa Society. And seeing some of the inner workings there that led to an interesting outcome that you would not normally think of in terms of ophthalmology and politics, because you don't, those are not normally the things that go together. But first off, I have a very happy to say we've got a fantastic in-studio guest to talk about some interesting things. He is a strategist and a global campaign leader, has worked all over the world and particularly in Africa. And he's also the chairman of a campaign called Fair Play, which is to do with food security. So we're going to be talking about a few of those issues, talking about African development, about food security, about South Africa. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. Francois Barrett is his name, and he joins us in the studio. Francois, thank you so much for being with us today on Chai FM.
Good morning, Benji. It's wonderful to be here, and it's a particularly beautiful day, so it's terrific all round.
Good timing. Now, Francois, you have been involved with political campaigns, civil society campaigns all over the world. You've done stuff on the African continent. You're based in the States now, where a lot of your work is done. You start off here in South Africa. Maybe, you know, it's not like you're an accountant, right, or a doctor where there's a somewhat normal path. So I'm always interested with people who end up in careers that don't have obvious trajectories. You know, tell us how you got into this and how you ended up here.
I started my career really underground. Mm-hmm. When I was 16, I started working part-time underground in the gold mines. I wasn't a mazama-zama, mind you. I was properly registered and a member of a trade union. And that enabled me later on to be able to go to university. I won a national debating contest, which had as its first prize, together with my friend Leon Vestoff, we won the contest, and it gave us the opportunity to go to university, both of us. And from there, I became an officer in the South African Air Force. I spent 2 years doing black business development in the townships in the mid-80s, when it was quite different to now, and then spent some time with Goldfields and with SAPI in corporate roles before starting my own firm in 1987. And things have developed from there.
Okay, absolutely fascinating. So that's a little bit of the background. We're going to be talking to Francois about where things developed. But for now, we're just going to take a short break. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. So we are with Francois Barrett today. He is a global strategist and a campaign head. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of issues that he is working on at the moment. Now, Francois, I can't let an opportunity with someone like yourself go before we get into the important stuff. You live in Virginia. It's a fairly red state, I think it's fair to say. So it's not all of it, but a big chunk. And today we have a new president. I'm interested in your thoughts about where this leaves Africa, where it leaves America in general, on one foot, as we say in the tradition.
President Trump has a different view from the previous administration, not only politically, but he's also in terms of the view of the world, in terms of trade, in terms of security, and in terms of culture. And therefore, both South Africa and the rest of Africa will have to adapt to what the Trump administration is going to require in this new world view. And when I listen to some of the African and South African politicians, it's clear to me that that change, that pivot, hasn't happened yet.
Someone hasn't got the memo.
Well, the memo hasn't been published yet. I think the first part of the memo will be the executive orders that come out tomorrow, and everyone will see which direction it's taking in its detail, not only in broad concept. But South Africa particularly is facing quite an uphill battle in terms of the America First agenda. And that is because South Africa has not made any effort, really, to stay close to the U.S., to stay close to the West in terms of its choices politically and in terms of international politics. And therefore, I think South Africa has a margin by which it is behind that will be determined in the next couple of weeks as the administration settles down.
Yeah, it will be very, very interesting to watch and see where that goes. Francois, let's move back to the continent. You've had a lot of experience with running elections on the African continent and working with civil society. What's your assessment of where the continent is going and what are maybe the opportunities and threats coming out at the moment?
We all know that Africa has great promise in terms of people and resources. It is probably the continent with the only really good outlook in the long term. The question is, what are the choices that will be made in the short term? And the reason for that is because if you read a recent Wall Street Journal article, it talks about the wars returning to Africa. And while everyone is talking about the Gaza war, quite rightly, the war in Ukraine, quite rightly, there are wars happening all over Africa, of which the jihadist insurgency has really rippled into many countries where it wasn't present before. For instance, Mozambique. And when you have a country like Mozambique on the South African border, facing not only internal instability, although there is a pause now for 3 months, the government is going to be distracted by its political problems, while the insurgency will see it as an opportunity. And therefore, the insurgency from the north, I believe, is not only a Mozambican problem, it's a regional problem. Mm-hmm. It's a problem particularly for South Africa. And this will also be a test of whether South Africa is able to stand up against some of these issues and will be able to make a contribution to solving them. So far, the South African contribution hasn't been really game-changing. And therefore, when you look at the Sahel, there are enormous problems creeping up there. When you look at China, it is really not Africa's friend. China is exploiting Africa, but it's achieving its strategic goals. And when you look at ports from Djibouti to Algeria on the Mediterranean, the access that South Africa is granting the Chinese Navy, and then you look at the possibility of Chinese ports in the Atlantic, there is a geopolitical option of Africa becoming a continent for Chinese aggression against the West. Mm-hmm. And so South Africa and other African countries may think that they are non-aligned, but they are clearly misaligned.
Now, it's interesting, you know, Mozambique obviously is the sort of cautionary tale of how I think an African country can go wrong in our region. And yet, remarkably, kind of almost next door, you have Botswana, which was kind of, for a long time, the sort of darling of the region, had started to have a few issues, and has just had a successful election. Some very young people in this cabinet, first change of power since 1965, I think, when the party was in there. And so there is this kind of a yin and yang on the continent, where you can see some stuff is working and the working the way it's supposed to, and then some stuff is not. What do you think accounts for the difference in some of these polities that we're seeing?
Botswana has a very long history of stability, democracy, and good governance. The corruption in Botswana is not at a level where any other African country almost can claim. Mm-hmm. It is a country with a very fixed view of its own worth, of how Botswana conduct themselves. And if you look at Africa, it's a young continent.
Yeah.
The young people are ruling. If you have, for many years, I have believed that Africa is really a continent where the grandfathers rule the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Botswana has shown that that's changing. The grandchildren are asserting themselves now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a minister in this new government in Botswana that's like 26 years old, I think.
Yes, and I don't think age is really the issue. It is about new thinking. It is about changing the fixed ways of previous governments and perhaps a sense of entitlement that crept in over the years. But Botswana is not the only point of light in Africa. If you look at Namibia, it has great promise too. If you look at Cabo Verde, for instance, it's one of the best performers in Africa, and no one talks about it.
It was actually considered, I think, the freest country on the continent, even more so if you look at these, you know, these, than us. If you look at these Freedom House ratings and all, there's a Cabo de Verde at the top.
Cabo Verde is not only quite free, I was also interested to see that it's in the top four in terms of innovation in Africa. And
it's small. I mean, it's not a big country, right?
Yes, I remember many years ago when South African Airways used to fly via Sal Island in the Cabo Verde to North America. It was such a great thing to step out of the plane and breathe fresh sea air and drink coffee and experience the tropics. Perhaps Cabo Verde will be able to become in the Atlantic what Mauritius had become in the Indian Ocean.
Mm. Now, I think part of what you're saying is that there has been this generational shift. As you say, Africa is a very young continent on average. It's the only place, actually, in the world, really, maybe except for South America, where you have a population that's still growing. Other parts of the world, my favorite statistic for Shabbos tables at the moment is that there's more adult diapers sold in Japan than there are children's diapers at the moment. But it's not happening in Africa. And I kind of get the sense that there's a new generation of Africans, guys who have been to, particularly you see it with Nigerians, I think, and Kenyans, also in South Africans, guys have gone to Western universities, to, you know, the kind of the quote-unquote Harvards of the world, and have learned a lot from that, and have come back and really are less interested in some of the classic ideological and political issues on the continent, and really have a kind of, as we would say, need a tachlis approach for what they're looking for. Do you think that that's a trend that we're seeing?
Africans have to take their future into their own hands. And when you look at the past, colonialism hasn't worked for Africa. Mm-hmm. Communism hasn't worked for Africa. Socialism hasn't worked for Africa. The one C they haven't tried yet is capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the impression that young Africans are very keen to be entrepreneurs, to take their future into their own hands, and to really make their way in the world, not only in Africa, but beyond Africa. If you look at how successful the African diaspora is in North America, for instance,
yes,
it holds great promise for the future.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking more about this particular topic with Francois Barrett. He is a strategist and a campaign leader. And you're listening to 101.9 High FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 High FM. Talking today, Francois Barrett. He is a campaign leader and a strategist. And we're talking about some of the work that he's doing, particularly around Africa. And Francois, before the break, we were talking about potential for African future. And that's actually something you've been very involved in, getting young people into leadership positions. There's a very specific project which allows them to get into these sort of next level of positions and engagement. Talk to us a little bit about that and your work around that and what you're seeing.
One of the most rewarding entities I've ever been involved in is the Presidential Precinct.
Mm-hmm.
This was formed between two universities, the University of Virginia and the College of William and Mary in the United States in Virginia, the Commonwealth where I live, and three presidential homes, And these three presidential homes have teamed up with the two universities to provide young leaders from developing nations with tools for whatever they want to do to contribute to society when they get back home. Mm-hmm. And what I've been particularly involved in is the young African leaders. What we have done at the presidential precinct is develop programs where young African leaders come to the presidential precinct in Charlottesville in Virginia, and they move between the five institutions partnering to work with the presidential precinct, and they look at things like constitutionalism, how to write a constitution. They write a constitution and criticize it and debate it. They go to the business school. They get some business school skills, design thinking, how to approach things from a business perspective. They look at how to raise funds for whatever it is they want to do. And they put together in the course of this their own package of what they want to achieve when they get back home. And there are the most amazing people who do this. And I'm particularly proud that last year we appointed the second president of the presidential precinct, the CEO, and she came to Yossi Ogunshe from Nigeria as a journalist. She was very successful, became editor of the largest Sunday newspaper in Nigeria. She headed to the BBC, and she actually took a pay cut to come to the presidential precinct, and she's the first ever member of the cohort as the second CEO to run the presidential precinct. And what they do there is they not only develop a program where they bring people over and work with them, but the presidential precinct has a network, an online network similar to LinkedIn, where it provides ongoing connection between these young African leaders. It's probably the biggest pool of leadership talent in Africa, 7,000 of them.
Wow, amazing.
It is truly amazing. But when you see what they do when they get back home, that's the thing that's really outstanding. And many of these young leaders from the first cohort 10 years ago, the organization's only 10 years old, have now moved into senior positions. You talked about a cabinet minister being appointed at the age of 26. Well, the presidential precinct really takes young people between the ages of 25 and 35. We have two signature programs, one of which focuses on democracy and rule of law and governance, and the other one focuses, it's a new program, is a signature program on economic development and how free markets work and how to promote the economy of the countries in which they are. We bring together entrepreneurs. And the first program took place last year, sponsored by one of our board members, John Olajide. The founder of the organization, Jim Murray, has really carried the load for the presidential precinct for a long time already and has just been incredible in his vision of providing young leaders with opportunities. And if I could encourage anyone, it is not only to see if young people would qualify for participating in these programs, but particularly for giving support to the presidential precinct.
Yeah, and it's worth looking up. You can go, if you have a look on the website, you can see some of the leaders, what they're doing in their home countries across the continent. Some very, very impressive stuff. And good to see a structured program that helps people, young people, to move in a proper direction and gives them a network to move around with.
And they've become a lifetime community. Hmm. They're in touch with each other, whether they live in the DRC or South Africa or North Africa. They have all kept in touch, and they are all encouraging and helping each other. If you go to www.presidentialprecinct.org, you'll be able to see much more than what we could possibly talk about now.
Well, let's so I'll go have a look at that and have a look. Let's move on to one of your other projects, Francois. There's something called Fair Play, which touches on an issue maybe on the other side of the spectrum, right? Because before you can get to having big leaders and young people, you actually have to feed them. And what Fair Play does is it sort of works on behalf of the agricultural sector, various agricultural sectors in South Africa, to talk about how do we strengthen food security, and agriculture in the country. So give us a bit more detail about that and what you're focusing on at the moment.
The Fair Play movement is a trade movement that we founded, and it's not the Royal We. I did this with a number of friends and colleagues and supporters in 2016. And the reason we founded it in 2016 was because we became aware of the issue of trade dumping in the poultry industry in South Africa. Hmm. Now, one would say that's a very boring subject. It's for the experts to discuss. Until you look at what has really happened as a result of that, when we started out, there was really no understanding of the poultry industry as the largest agricultural sector in South Africa and absolutely vital for food security, and in fact that the poultry industry is a center of excellence. People always talk about banking as a pocket of excellence for South Africa. Poultry is a vital pocket of excellence for South Africa. It is constantly, every year, in the top five or six most competitive poultry industries in the world. Hmm. And so we not only can be very proud, but we should be very thankful that we have such an industry. However, there is an enormous problem. And that problem is that food does not get to all the people where it should get to. And food access, as a result, has in South Africa in 2017, we've discovered that 27% of children under five in South Africa are stunted, which means their brains and their bodies don't develop properly. And if it's not turned around before the age of five, they are stunted for life. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the highest rates in the world, which is shameful in a country that produces enough food to feed all its people. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we've discovered it's been going in the wrong direction. It's now 28.8%. And that is because, in the first place, dumping has undermined the food access.
So for people who are not economists, so what does dumping actually refer to as a technical term?
Dumping means that producers in other countries put their products in the market either below the cost of production in their home market or below the cost at which they sell it in their home market. And in this process, they undermine the ability of local companies to compete fairly with them, hence the name Fair Play Movement. What happens over time is that the base of production in the country to where they dump is eroded. I'll give you an example. Ghana used to produce 95% of their own chicken. Thanks to a European partnership agreement, an EPA, they had to open their market to European chicken and others. As a result, Ghana today produces only 5% of its own chicken. Chicken has been dumped there at an enormous cost to the local industry, wiped it out, and in 2017, I read a report by USAID that chicken in Ghana was more expensive than steak in South Africa. So there is a short-term gain of pushing down prices, and then there is the kick of the long-term loss of jobs, of food security, and of food access. And that is what Fair Play is fighting, not only in agriculture, but we believe it's happening in many other cases as well. If you look at, for instance, the industrial base of South Africa, we know that the textile industry was wiped out because of a similar thing, dumping by China, mostly. Today, South Africa is not really a major contender in textiles and in clothing. This is happening in every sector of the economy if the government allows it. So I think with the new era of the Trump administration, a South Africa first policy may also start delivering results.
I mean, and at the same time as a sort of American first, I mean, are you suggesting that in South Africa we apply tariffs to chickens?
Every country applies tariffs. Mm-hmm. In the world, there is not a single country that has no tariffs whatsoever. Tariffs are a choice. But it's not only about tariffs. We believe in free trade as the Fair Play Movement, but we also believe there should be a punishment for dumping. Mm-hmm. South Africa at the moment has 9 countries that are under punishment for having dumped poultry in South Africa, and therefore they pay a levy. an anti-dumping levy, which is fair play.
So in other words, it's not an across-the-board thing where we're going to say, well, we've got an industry, we want to protect it, even though it's not necessarily competitive, but you're saying per country, if you break the rules, then we're going to apply some kind of an accountability.
The South African government has been successful in applying anti-dumping levies where dumping takes place. And remember, it's not something you just allege. You have to prove it. And there's an independent body, ITAC, that will assess it and make recommendations to the government. So it's an expensive process as well. Industries have to spend a lot of money to try and prove it, and the government has to spend a lot of money assessing it. And therefore, it's not something that's done lightly. Mm-hmm. But South Africa has to act in its own interests when it comes to particularly food access and the industrial base.
You've been arguing as fair play that you want to see a you actually want to see a VAT-free application on the chicken. What is the idea behind that?
Well, if you look at food access and you look at the issue of child stunting, it's obvious that to make animal protein more affordable, it has to be chicken. 66% of all meat consumed in South Africa is chicken in some form.
Yeah.
The poorest people need to pay less. And the simplest, fastest way to effectively let them have more access to chicken at more affordable rates is to remove value-added tax of 15% on certain chicken pieces. Mm-hmm. And we've been very careful in not advocating for a blanket 15% discount in terms of value-added tax, but that it should be targeted. It has become a policy of the DA. It has become something supported by President Ramaphosa. He announced it in his State of the Nation address. And we are really asking very seriously for the government to look at this not as a financial matter, but as a social matter, to really help those children that are stunted, poor families that are struggling to feed their children and their families, and to make sure that value-added tax is removed on those pieces of chicken that poor people mostly buy.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was reading about how, for example, stuff like pork is not very well consumed in this country. Beef is obviously expensive. You find sheep and goats are eaten quite a lot, but really chicken is the main, and since the prices have gone up, actually sardines, people have been like swapping out protein for, you know, pilchards and that sort of thing. But chicken is like the core.
Chicken is the core of the South African diet when it comes to animal protein. As I said, 66% of all meat consumed is chicken. And therefore, if you look at how competitive the industry is, not only will it benefit poor consumers who will be able to afford more easily to buy chicken, but it will also help to create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another area where South Africa really needs to pull its finger out of the darkest places and ensure that we act in the interest of bringing light to the country's economy.
Mm. Well, Francois, I can tell you that as a community is often very passionate about the price of chicken. I'm sure that there'd be a lot of support for your program. If people want to find out more about Fair Play, where can they do that?
It's very simple, www.fairplaymovement.org.
Okay, so there you go. If you want to go see what is going on in the chicken market, you can find more information there. Francois, absolutely fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today, and do stay safe with your travels, and good luck with your work.
Thank you, and shalom to all your listeners.
Thank you so much. That's Francois Barrett. He is a campaign strategist and working on projects that we have spoken about today, like the Presidential Precinct and Fair Play Trade Movement, and you can go check those out on your internet and have a look and see. I am Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.